morning, everyone. Am I on? Yes, I'm on. Nothing like hearing a little Pink Floyd to remind you to get up on the wall with us. Hey, we want to welcome those that are in the auditorium with us, those that might be joining us online. Thank you for joining us. We are in week two of this series that we have called Brick by Brick, where we are making our way through the story in the book of Nehemiah. I want to start out by asking you a question. Have you ever had something in your life that was broken, that you looked at it, you were heartbroken about it, but you didn't know where to start to fix it? Like you woke up one time or one day and you looked at something in your life, like, this is not how I planned my life to be, and this is not how it should be, but I don't know how to fix it. And maybe that's where some of you are today. Maybe nobody knows about that, that you're trying to hold things together, but you have something broken in your life. Maybe it's your marriage, and it's just not in a good place, and you're not sure why, but every time that you've tried to sit down and talk about it, it just seems to make things worse, so you stop talking. And now you're wondering if it's too late, or maybe it's your career, that you started out your career, and you had these dreams, and you had these plans about how it will play out, but now you've found some doors that have closed. Or there are some circumstances that have changed, and these dreams that you had have seemed to have died and they're broken. Or maybe for you, it's your faith. You used to be closer to God. Church used to feel meaningful. Prayer used to feel real, but now it just feels like you're going through the motions and you're not sure when it happened and you're not sure why it happened, but you look at your spiritual life and you're like, that's not the way it's supposed to be, or it's a habit that's gotten out of control. Or it's a disappointment in life that has just kind of left you stuck. And you didn't plan for it, you didn't see it coming, but here you are. And you're not really sure how to fix it. All of us in this room have experienced those seasons where something important in our lives just falls apart. And sometimes it's our doing, sometimes it's the decisions that we've made that lead to some brokenness in our life, but other times it's something that happened to us. But either way, you look at some part of your life and you see the wreckage and you think, what now? And for some people, unfortunately, you start to believe and you just settle. You're like, I guess that's just the way that it is. And you adjust your expectations and you lower your expectations and you just settle for less. I heard a pastor say one time that your life is a gift from God, but what you do with your life is your gift back to Him. And God didn't create you to settle. And the story of Nehemiah paints us a different picture. It gives us a different path. When Nehemiah saw something that was broken, he didn't just settle for it. He stepped forward and towards it. And God used him to rebuild something that often people would say that was beyond repair. So we'll be in Nehemiah chapter 2 this morning. We'll pick up there if you want to go ahead and turn in your Bibles to there. And as you're turning there, let me catch you up on the story. In the year 586 BC, the Babylonian Empire and the army invades Israel, and they completely destroy the city of Jerusalem. Many of the Jews at that time were taken as prisoners of war, and they lived in exile. And a few years later, the Persians defeated the Babylonians, and they allowed the Israelites to return back home. And over the decades, they tried to rebuild the city, but oftentimes they were turned away or they just hit dead ends. So you fast forward 140 years later, after the city was destroyed, and we're introduced to this ordinary guy, this everyday guy named Nehemiah. When the Jews were freed by the Persians to go back home, some didn't. Some just settled and stayed in Persia, and that's what Nehemiah had done. And he ended up being the cupbearer to the king. He was just an ordinary guy. He had no skills, no authority. He's just a servant to a foreign king. But one day, he hears about the broken condition of the city of Jerusalem, and it just wrecks him. And any time that God wants to use an ordinary person to do something extraordinary, he does three things. The first thing he'll do is he'll break your heart. He'll break your heart over something. You'll see something in your life or in your family or in the community around you, and you'll go, why is this happening? And the next thing he'll do is he'll prompt you to pray. And then eventually God will move you to do something about it. He'll move you to action. And that's exactly what happens to Nehemiah. He's devastated by this news that he hears. And he mourns and he prays and he fasts. And then he stands up as a man of action and says, somebody's got to do something about this. And it might as well be me. And what was before him and the challenge that was before him was enormous. The walls of the city of Jerusalem have laid in ruins for over 140 years. And people thought it would never be rebuilt. But here we have this ordinary servant, this ordinary guy who's living 800 miles away, and he believed that it could be rebuilt. He looked at the destruction and said, and he got this picture, this glimpse of what could be and what should be. And the book of Nehemiah is what happens when a man is gripped by the vision of God and he goes after it with all his heart. So how did this cupbearer, how did this servant with no real skills or resources, how did he rebuild a city in 52 days? Well, that's where we're going to pick up this morning. And I'm going to share with us four steps that we can take in our own lives to repair some part of our lives that's broken and needs repair. The first thing that we need to do is we need to seek God faithfully. When something in your life is broken, when God breaks your heart over something in your life, when it weighs on your heart and it keeps you up at night, our instincts, the first thing we want to do is like, I got to do something about this. We want to immediately take a step to fix it, to do something. But Nehemiah shows us that the very first thing that we need to do is not to, step out in action, but to seek God faithfully. We'll pick up in verse 1 of chapter 2. It says, in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was brought for him, I took the wine and I gave it to the king. I had not been sad in his presence before, so the king asked me, why does your face look so sad when you are not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of heart. And I was very much afraid. If you're not careful, you might miss a very important detail. Nehemiah tells us that it is now the month of Nisan. That's 4 months later. Nehemiah tells us that he's been praying and waiting and hoping for 4 months and nothing. No breakthrough, no doors opened, just silence. And some of you know that feeling. You've been praying for something to change in a relationship or something to change in your life, and it's been days, weeks, maybe even years, and you get to this point and you wonder, did I hear God wrong? Has he forgotten about me? Is this thing ever going to change? But what we need to understand and what Nehemiah realizes is that waiting isn't wasted. It's in the waiting room where our faith grows roots. It's where God prepares us for what lies ahead. And so Nehemiah continued to seek God faithfully day after day for 4 months. But everybody has a breaking point. And after 4 months of waiting and wondering if it would ever happen, he can't hide his emotions any longer. And the king noticed the sadness on his face, and he asks the question that opens the door. And suddenly, the moment that Nehemiah has been waiting for is here, and he tells us that he was terrified. Why would he be terrified? Because Nehemiah knew that he had to get permission from the king to rebuild the city of Jerusalem. And King Artaxerxes was no friend to the Jews. In fact, about 10 years before this, he had outlawed any rebuilding in the city because Jerusalem and the Israelites had this history of revolt against foreign kings. So Nehemiah is risking his life with this request. He had reason to be afraid and be terrified, but he wasn't going to let fear dominate him. He goes on in verse 4, he says, the king said to me, what is it that you want? And then I prayed to the God of heaven, and I answered the king. The king's heart is in God's hands. And God starts adjusting the king's thinking to be open to something that he had been closed to for years. And now he was open to Nehemiah's request. And Nehemiah doesn't panic in the moment. Instead, he prays. It's just this quick, under-the-breath prayer to God. God, guide my words. Is this the door? Is the door now open? And this moment wasn't random. This time of prayer wasn't just some random flippant prayer. It was built on 4 months of faithful prayer behind the scenes. He had been faithfully turning to God, waiting on God, listening to God, waiting for the moment so that when that door opened, he was ready. But he wanted some final confirmation, so he prays to God. And here's why this matters for some of us. When we are facing things in our lives that seem like they are beyond repair, that these things that we can't fix on our own, maybe it's a relationship that's drifting, or a prodigal child that can't reach, that we can't reach for some reason, or some personal struggle that we're just tired of carrying. And Nehemiah reminds us that before we act, before we rush into action, we need to make sure that we are seeking God first. Seeking God faithfully means that we refuse to take a step without knowing that he's there with us. It means staying in this posture of prayerful dependence, even when the timeline stretches well beyond what we expect it to be. It means asking God repeatedly, what do you want me to do right now? Is this the time that I need to take a step? You see, Nehemiah didn't push his way forward. He quietly waited, and he continued to seek God for 4 months, waiting for God to open the door. And when it did, he was ready. Because he had been faithful in the quiet, when that door opened, he was prepared to walk through it. So you start by seeking God faithfully. You say, God, I need you. You know that I need you. This is beyond anything that I can do on my own. Direct me, guide me, open the doors that need to be opened. And then you just keep bringing these requests to God day after day, prayer after prayer, until he shows you what that next step will be. So we seek God faithfully so that he can help us do this next step. And that is that we need to define the mission clearly. That we need an inspiring picture of a better future. And after 4 months of prayer, Nehemiah finally gets his moment. The king notices his sadness and he asks, what's wrong? And in that moment, Nehemiah could have panicked. He could have kind of dismissed it and said, oh, you know, it's nothing, king. It's just had a hard week. But instead, he's clear. He's confident. He knows exactly what it is that God has called him to do. He says, and I answer the king, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in his sight, let him send me to the city where my ancestors are buried so that I can rebuild it. Nehemiah doesn't give this vague emotional response. He doesn't say, well, you know, I just kind of feel bad about what's going on back home and I want to see what's going on. No, he clearly names the goal. He clearly names the target. King, please send me to Judah. Send me to Jerusalem so that I can rebuild the city. You see, when we start thinking about taking next steps in repairing something in our life, clarity isn't just something helpful, it's essential. That, you know, we can't move forward with purpose if we don't know what we're aiming for. So we need to spend some time to clearly define what it is. And I think that's where a lot of people get stuck. We feel the burden. We know something is off. We know something is broken or wrong, but then we don't take the time to really define the direction that we need to take. That things just kind of stay in the swirl of emotion and frustration and these vague intentions about wanting something to change and get better. But if we want to change something, then we have to be able to define it clearly. That we go before God and say, God, what are you calling me to do here? Will you give me a clear picture of a better future? Let's say your marriage is struggling. And instead of just saying, you know, I want it to get better. That sounds great, but it's a little bit too vague. What if instead you said, I want to rebuild trust. And I want to relearn what it means to fall in love again. You see, that kind of clarity gives you some direction and a mission to go after. Or maybe it's your relationship with God. And you know that it's been distant for a while. Instead of just saying, I want to grow spiritually. What if you said, I want to rebuild a daily rhythm of prayer. I want to open my heart to the direction leading of God in my life. Or maybe you look at your household and you realize you just live under these financial pressures all the time and you fight about money all the time. And so what you say is, you know what? I will lead my family over the next 18 months to be completely debt-free so that we don't have this burden of debt hanging over our head. Where you say, this year or in the next 6 months, I want to reconnect with an adult child that our relationship has just been broken. Defining the mission doesn't mean that you have all the answers. It just means that you have named a target. And this kind of clarity gives more than just direction. It gives hope. Because instead of just looking at your life or this part of your life and saying that it's a mess, now you have a mission that you can walk towards, that you can improve and build on. So what is that issue in your life? What is that burden, that heartbreak, that heartache in your life of something in your life that needs to be repaired? Can you define it clearly? Can you define a picture of a better future for that part of your life clearly? Don't let it just stay abstract and vague. Put words around it. Name it. Pray about it. Write it down if you have to. Because when you name what needs to be rebuilt, now you have something that you can pray about. Now you have something that you can plan around. Now you have something that you can actually move towards to repair. But here's the thing. While clarity is important, while it is absolutely essential to actually repair some things in your life, it's not the finish line. Too many people just stop at the what. They know what's broken. They know what needs to change, but they never think about how. How do I actually take these initial steps to repair this, to fix this? Nehemiah didn't stop after just naming the mission. He didn't just say, God, I hope this all works out. No, he started planning. He started preparing strategically, thoughtfully, prayerfully. And so that's the next step that we have to do, is that we have to prepare intentionally. A lot of times when we see something that needs to be repaired, either in our life or in our community or in our family, it's easy to get fired up spiritually, but there's no follow through practically or pragmatically in our life. We can feel called to do something. We feel burdened, but when it comes to taking that first step towards fixing it, we stall. We stall out and we don't take that step because we haven't taken the time to prepare. But not Nehemiah. When the moment comes, he's ready. It says, then the king, with the queen sitting beside him, asked me, how long will your journey take? And when will you get back? And it pleased the king to send me, so I set a time. And that little phrase there, so I set a time, tells us something important about what Nehemiah had been doing. He had been thinking through this plan of attack for the last 4 months. Yes, he had been praying, but during that 4 months, he had also been planning. And he'd already calculated the distance. He knew the route. He knew the resources that he would need. So when the king asked him, he didn't hesitate. He was ready with an answer of how long he was going to request being away from the king. But he didn't stop there. In verses 7 and 8, he says, I also said to him, if it pleases the king, may I have letters to the governors of Trans-Euphrates, so that they will provide me safe conduct until I arrive in Judah. And may I have a letter to Asaph, keeper of the royal park, so he will give me timber to make beams for the gates of the citadel by the temple and for the city wall and for the residence that I will occupy. And because the gracious hand of my God was on me, the king granted my requests. Think about the details that Nehemiah had already thought through. He asked for protection. He knows it's an 800-mile journey through different provinces. And so he asked the king to have him a sealed letter so that he could show those and have safe passage through it. So he asked for permission, and he asked for protection through that. And then he asked for provision. He says, I want you to let me go, and I want you to give me these letters of protection. And by the way, king, I want you to pay for it too. I mean, that's some audacity there in front of the king that could kill him if he didn't like it. Nehemiah has never taken on a journey like this. He wasn't a contractor. He never built something like this. But when the opportunity came, he rattled off exactly what was needed. He even knew the name of the foreman of the royal forest. Think about the amount of legwork that he had done in those 4 months. He was prepared to answer the king. In other words, he wasn't just passionate. He was prepared. Nehemiah didn't show up in Jerusalem with these good intentions. He had taken 4 months to prayerfully consider what was needed and to have a plan. He counted the cost, and he gathered what was needed before he took that journey to Jerusalem. That's what it looks like to prepare intentionally. So as you look at your own life or that area or that burden that you want to have changed in your life, you've defined your mission. You've identified what needs to be rebuilt. Now the question is, what are the next steps that you need to take to move forward? What's the next conversation that you need to have? What is your support system going to be in your life so that you can be consistent and be held accountable to make these changes? So if you want to rebuild your marriage, have you looked for counselors? Have you scheduled a counseling appointment? Have you looked at your own life and identified the areas of your life that need to be changed? Maybe it's in your words. Maybe it's in your attitude. Maybe it's in your calendar and the time that you're spending together. Do you have a plan and dates on the calendar already for date night so that you can reconnect as husband and wife? If you want to grow spiritually, what's the plan? What are the next steps that you need to have in place? Is there a set time that you're going to sit down with the Lord each day? Do you have a Bible reading plan already picked out that will help guide your time in the Word? Do you have a plan to join a group? Do you have a plan to join a serving team? If you want to break a habit, who do you have in your life that can hold you accountable? If you want to restore some relationship that's broken, have you picked out a time, a day, when you're actually going to pick up the phone and have that conversation? You don't have to know everything, but you do need to have a plan. God honors faithful planning. He works through it. And if you look at Nehemiah's example, he didn't know exactly how everything would unfold, but he knew enough, and he had a plan in place enough that he could take that first step. What Nehemiah reminds us is that we definitely have to seek God faithfully and pray about it. But beyond that, we also need to prepare for it. Because when God finally opens that door that we've been praying for, the worst thing that could happen is for us to not be prepared to walk through it. So Nehemiah sought God faithfully. He defined the mission clearly, and he prepared intentionally. But none of that really mattered unless he did this last step and actually took that first step towards changing something. Because let's be honest, this is where a lot of times we get stuck. We pray, we plan, we think it through, and then we hesitate. We wait for perfect conditions, or we wait until we feel ready, or sometimes we just get paralyzed and frozen by fear of the unknown, fear of whether or not this will actually work out. But Nehemiah, he didn't let fear keep him stuck. He stepped forward, and if you and I are actually going to walk towards repairing and rebuilding what's broken in our lives, we'll have to do the same thing. That this fourth step is that we need to step forward boldly. As you read the story of Nehemiah, he eventually makes a long journey and he arrives in Jerusalem. And he takes some time at nighttime to quietly survey the damage that had taken place. He walks the perimeter. He sees the broken gates. He identifies the areas of the collapsed walls and the rubble that had been sitting there for over a century. And so he had a clear game plan of what needed to happen now. And then he gathers the people that live there and he says this. It says, then I said to them, do you see the trouble we're in? Jerusalem lies in ruins and its gates have been burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem and we will no longer be in disgrace. And I also told them about the gracious hand of my God on me and what the king had said to me. This is the moment. And Nehemiah boldly takes that step forward and he calls others to do the same thing. And notice his posture. He doesn't come in as this outside expert. He doesn't come in with pride or superiority. He doesn't chastise them for not already doing the work that they could have done. No, he says, do you see the trouble that we are in? He includes himself in the pain that they are experiencing, and he includes himself in the mission to rebuild it. And then he points them back to God's faithfulness. And he says, let me tell you about how God has already been working. Let me tell you about the king who had no reason to say yes to my request, and yet he did. Let me tell you about the gracious hand of God that's been on me on every step of this. And in that moment, the people responded, and they said, let us start rebuilding. And so they began this good work. And they know it's not going to be easy. They know it's going to be difficult. But they also know that doing nothing is no longer an option. This is what bold faith looks like. It's not necessarily loud. It's not necessarily flashy. It's not fearless. It's simple obedience, sometimes in spite of fear. And that's the challenge for us, to take that first step, even if it's scary. Because there will always be a reason to wait. There's always an excuse to delay. Before that first step, you will never feel fully ready. You won't have every answer. But if God has made it clear, faith means stepping boldly out and taking that first step, the step to ask for forgiveness, the step to find a trusted friend and open up about a struggle in your life, the step to go to a Bible study for the first time in a long time or ever, to re-engage your faith, the step to lead your family. And you don't need to know the whole path. You just need to take that next faithful step. And that's exactly what happened to us, to a small group of us 17 years ago. God was doing something powerful in our lives through the River Ridge Church. And our faith was growing. And we wanted others to experience what we were experiencing in our lives. The problem was that we all lived down here in Taze Valley, and we were driving to Charleston at the time. And every time we would ask a neighbor or a coworker to come with us, they'd say, hey, it sounds great, but that's just too far. And so this small group of us, we started to pray about it. And God gave us this burden where we said, somebody has to reach our city, our community, our neighbors. It may as well be us. And so, yeah. And so in the fall of 2008, about 70 of us gathered for the first time at West Hayes Elementary. And we had no idea what God was about to do. We just took that next faithful step. And what's happened since then has been nothing short of miraculous. Sometimes I get asked, does you ever imagine that you'd be leading a church like this? And my answer every single time is never. Not in a million years. I mean, I was just this introverted civil engineer who had experienced something in my life, and I wanted others to experience the same thing in theirs. I was actually talking to someone last week, and they were asking me, like, hey, why do you think the church has exploded like this? Why do you think things have happened the way that they have? And my honest answer was like Nehemiah. It's just the gracious hand of God. I don't know why he's done it, but it's been an amazing ride. That we'll be in staff meetings sometimes, and we will just shake our head in marvel. And we ask, why us? But because we know us, and we're not that good. But we are grateful. I mean, it's been an amazing journey that God has given us a front row seat to see him work in the lives of our friends and our neighbors and bring change in their life. We have seen God move in incredible ways, and he's moving again. And we are facing a familiar problem, and that is that we're out of room. One of the core values that drives us is we say that an empty seat is a serious thing. And we say that because every empty seat represents someone who can come and hear and respond to the good news of God's grace. So on July 27th, we're going to launch a third service. You've heard us talk about this. We'll have three services at 8:30, at 10 o'clock, and at 11 o'clock to make more room for people. Our friends, our family members, our neighbors, so that they have empty seats to come and to experience what we've experienced already, to experience the good, gracious hand of God on them that can lead them to change. And we're asking you to be a part of it. We want to ask you to be a part of what God is already doing. If you love this place, if you've experienced God's gracious hand on your life, we're going to invite you to join us. We need about 180 of you who aren't currently serving to join us on the wall so that we can serve the people that aren't here yet, the families that will come, the kids that will come, the adults that will come. But today, we're going to honor those who are already building the wall, those who week in and week out are serving the needs of this church. So during this closing song, I'm going to ask anybody, if you're serving in any capacity, small group leader, home group leader, guest services, security, if you're serving in any capacity, during this closing song, we're going to invite you to come up. You can grab a ticket that's for your ice cream out in the parking lot, and I want you to sign your name on the wall. And it's our time to celebrate you, to honor you for what you're doing, but it's also this reminder that God is still using ordinary people like you and me to do extraordinary things in this church and in our community. So why don't you go ahead and stand up? And if you are currently serving, I want to go ahead and invite you. You can go ahead and start making your way forward. Grab one of those tickets, sign your name on a wall, and we're going to close with a song of worship.
Yeah, if you're serving, go ahead and come on up, sign, get a ticket, and go get your ice cream. Look at the flowers, all of their beauty. Wonder, you know what you're doing. So why would I worry at all? You're faithful to supply everything I need, everything I need. My Father has it. been a great Sunday to be with you guys to celebrate where we've been and where we're going. If you guys are still making your way up to sign the wall, please continue to do so. Grab your tickets, go get your ice cream. If not, maybe you should think about signing up. Other than that, y'all have a great week. We'll see you next Sunday.